There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 928, March 8th. 2022, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Max is full of cash. Lewis feeling fresh. Nikita out in a flash. And Moi is making a quick dash. We shall explain gladly.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Toto can't let go and will be bitter for years to come. Russians banned from F1, but too late. For Fernando. Braun says everybody knows about ground effects and porpoising. Duh. And this week, we have a fresh episode of Loose on the Loose. And of course, the opinions of Mr. Loose do not in any way reflect the opinions of F1Weekly.com and its entire staff. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Also, I want to just give you guys an update. You'll be receiving an email every time we publish a podcast. There may be promotions on there, giveaways, free posters of me and Nasser. You never know. Also, I want to thank Steve Boyd. He had some issues with locating the podcast. Toby quickly resolved the problems. And we want to thank Steve for his continuous listening. There you have it, Nas. Welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Thank you. And you said, oh, by the way, in the goodie bag, we also have an interview with young American talent Reese Gore. So please stay tuned for that also. How is the Duke of Dijon doing on the left coast?
Mr. Dijon is doing quite well. The mustard and the burgundy is fresh. Right from the farm. So you can't have anything better than that. I mean, the giggling between Christian Horner and Toto Wolff looks like it's going to continue forever and ever. I can always picture it now. Toto and Christian Horner when they're in their mid-80s. And they'll be going, God darn it! Toto, I'm telling you! Everything was fair and square. So there you go, Nas. That's my rendition of the good old days of Christian Horner and Toto Wolff.
Yeah, and you mentioned about Toto being bitter. I can understand his bitterness. And he does not wish to speak to Mike Massey ever again. And who can blame him? But, you know, we have to move on. We got some testing coming up. And a guy who's really moving up the financial totem pole is Max Verstappen. And he is basically Jim Clark of the 21st century. One team wonder. Have you read and heard about his new mega deal with Red Bull that will keep him till the end of the 2028 season? That's a very long contract. Shows a lot of faith by the driver in the team. And of course, who can blame the team for having all the faith and putting all their eggs in a Dutch basket? And, you know, I was reading about what this deal is worth, and I realized, Mr. Rogers, that his paycheck will now rival checks from F1 Weekly, which are printed by Bank of Xerox, and we are talking over $250 million over the course of his contract, and that's about $3 million per month. So that's not a bad payday for driving a race car for 2 hours and throwing a tantrum if something goes wrong. What say you?
I think it's excellent, and he'll insist that he'll continue to prune his own beloved roses. So I'm very happy for Max. He's going to be the dominant one for a long time. And some people have already come out. And these are Scottish people, some British people. And they're saying Max is similar to Jackie Gleason. He's the greatest.
And how long before you start calling him the luckiest driver?
Well, we saw what happened. He is the luckiest driver on the face of the earth.
Yeah, these things happen. But I think what's going to happen, and it happens with every, it happened with Senna, Schumacher, Lewis Hamilton, of course, as you would like to remind us now and then. Once somebody becomes very successful, then slings and arrows are coming from every which way. And that's just the way it is. It's not the same thing with Seb also. Anyway, now talking of Lewis, the man wants title number 8. And of course, once again, who can blame him? After topping the timesheets in Barcelona testing, he is now on the Cool and the Gang program, saying he's fresh and fresh. And I'm sure his battles with Max and George will be so exciting. Now, if you saw the time, and of course, we don't know what fuel load or what they are doing, but George was very close to him, too close for comfort. It will be very interesting how things pan out in the first race, which obviously is not the end of the championship. But I think by the end of the first three races, we will get a pecking order. Who got the new car designs right and who needs to catch up? And it will not surprise me at all if the scenery on the front row is silver and a car sponsored by Oracle, courtesy of Mr. Larry Ellison, meaning Mercedes and Red Bull. But hopes are very high for Ferrari, but we will see how it works out. Now, the season starts March 20th. And sir, I forgot to mention this. The race, I think California time, Florida time starts at 11 o'clock, and I will have enough time to watch the podium ceremonies, but then I need to hop on my little Prius and go to the Tampa airport. And after, I guess, 3 years, I'm able to make my first trip across the pond. So I'm really, really looking forward to it. And we'll see what we can do once we get on the ground. Now, in Bahrain, which is where we're going to have testing soon, final testing, and then the race, your favorite, LCH, is the most successful driver on this track with 5 wins, including the last 3. And the one race he won against Mr. Rosberg, his teammate, that was very impressive because Rosberg had come in for late tire change. And after the race, he himself said that he should have won that race. That's what he said. He didn't say, look, Lewis was lucky. Now, Max has never won the Bahrain Grand Prix, which really means nothing. Among active drivers today, Sebastian Vettel has 4 wins, 2 with Red Bull and 2 with Ferrari. And Machismo has 3 wins, 2 with Renault and 1 with Ferrari, the very first time he went out on a prancing horse. And that was mucho impressive. Sir, Nikita Mazepin being told Dasvidaniya to the Russian driver. What's your personal take on that?
Well, if it was only Petrov a few years ago, it would have been a really good deal. But, you know, it's sort of unfair. I mean, that's what everybody's going to say, how it's unfair. Well, put yourself in the Ukrainian's shoes, and then you'll understand how unfair life is. Unfair for him? Hey, tell him to take it up with Putin, and maybe he'll change Putin's mind. But I think it's part of life. Life is unfair. The Ukrainians are suffering. Somebody else has to suffer. And if it's a billionaire, we'll give him some rough toilet paper just for laughs.
Well, interesting you said suffering. You know, that's what it is with every war. It's the common man, poor people who enroll in the armed forces. They get the real shaft, and the powers that be on each and every side. They sit in air-conditioned bungalows in London town, Moscow town, La Jolla, California. and travel in bulletproof cars, and their children, they only go to places like Stanford or London School of Economics or some French fancy name university in Switzerland. So what is absolute nonsense, and I hope this thing ends as soon as possible. Sooner the better. But going back to motor racing, sir, what do we have here? Let me see, where am I? Oh, yes. Like you said, it's sad but true, but it had to happen given the circumstances. Not saying it's right or wrong, but it was not a surprise. Nikita Mazepin's sponsorship from Daddy's fertilizer company, Uralkali, has turned toxic, like Monsanto's Roundup, and he is now paying the price. And that's something what Sergio Perez also said. The Russian Lance Stroll made his F1 debut with Haas F1 last year with Mick Schumacher as teammate. The two were teammates in karting also. Now listen to this. In karting, Nikita was second in the 2014 World Championship behind a chap named Lando Norris. So he's not a slowpoke driver. In 2018, he was again second, this time in the GP3 Championship behind French driver Antoine Hubert, who was sadly killed at Spa a few years ago in a Formula 2 race. Nikita spent 2 years in Formula 2 like Mick Schumacher. Both won two races each during their time in the series. Mick did win the championship in 2020. Now, as for Nikita's replacement, once again, we have to think of Sir Lewis Hamilton's famous line, cash is king, and the question is, who can it be now? Pietro Fittipaldi will test for team in Bahrain. His seat may be up for sale. I hope very much that Renault and Mark Webber can find $8 to $10 million, so the price is right to put the most deserving driver in Formula One, and that would be Webber's new grill mate and compadre, Oscar Piastri, Formula Two champion last year in his first season. So that's very, very impressive. Now, talk about life is not fair, and it's not fair that such a talented kid has to bring big money to get a seat at the top echelon of motorsports. But such is life. Next is in the lineup possible, the Italian Jesus, also known as Antonio Giovinazzi. He may bring a fistful of dollars from Ferrari. And another name mentioned is Indian driver Jehan Daruvala, a race winner in Formula 2 and Formula 3. We interviewed Jehan when he was in karting some years ago. And now I think this year it will be his third year in Formula 2. I would classify Jehan more like Massa of Mumbai than Kimi of Calcutta. And Mr. Rogers, since you like aviation and this and that, speaking of Calcutta, the city used to have, they've changed it now, but they used to have the best name for an international airport, Dum Dum. And I'm not making this up. FIA has also given the hammer and sickle to the Russian Grand Prix, and the contract has been terminated. This was going to be the last race in Sochi anyway, before the event was going to move to a purpose-built track called, I think the place is called Igora Drive near St. Petersburg. One can only hope madness that is going on comes to an end, sooner the better. Who would you like to see, sir, in at Haas?
My goodness, I think I'd like to see the phone ring and it's, what's his name? Herta? Colton Herta. It would be cool, but it's not going to happen. It's going to go to their reserve driver, Fittipaldi.
Yeah. It's going to go to somebody, whoever brings the most money. It's simple as that. But, you know, I'll tell you what I was thinking, what I would like to see, and I'm not wishing anybody ill will against anyone, but I would really like to see Oscar Piastri there. I'm going to tell you why. If he blows away Mick Schumacher, then Ferrari will know, you know, they have a Schumacher, but maybe a quarter Schumacher, because half was Ralph, okay?
Shameful, 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 shameful.
And I will be very, very surprised if Mick Schumacher can blow away Oscar Piastri. So that's why I want to see, like, what they call diamond-cut-diamond situation. Let's bring in somebody and let's see how good you are. And that's what we want. It's also known as cage rattling. So that's what I would like to see. So you want? I don't think Colton Herta should go to Formula One unless he's going with Andretti team, and I'm going to tell you why. Right now, he has a race-winning car. His stock is rising. It's at a 52-week high, even in this environment. If he goes to Haas, and he has already raced in Europe a couple of years. He raced in the British Formula 4. It was known as MSA against, what's his name, Lando Norris. Lando Norris won the championship. Then he went into Spanish F3, which runs by a fancy name. He did not even win that championship. Doesn't mean he's a bad driver. He's very competitive. He was winning races in Europe. But I think you don't leave a first-class ride with back-of-the-bus operation. You're never going to win a race in a Hugo or a Zastava. So he should stay here. Now, if he goes with Michael Andretti's team, they're not going to have the fastest car to go with, but at least he will be with people who will support him and would want him to succeed as much as that package will deliver. So you don't have to be feeling like Jaime Alguersuari or Sebastian Buemi and Liu Tse and Scott Speed when they were in the under the machete of Dr. Marco. So that's my take on Colton Herta. Okay, Imola, sir, this is some good news. Imola used to be San Marino Grand Prix track. And, you know, I have been to San Marino, which is a real small principality, and it's a very nice place, beautiful place. And the Imola will host a Formula One race till 2025, as it was confirmed by FIA today. The first championship race at this track was the 1980 Italian Grand Prix, won by Nelson Piquet, and it was the only time since 1950 when the Italian Grand Prix did not take place at Parco Monza. Have you been to this track, sir?
No, I have not.
Sir, I was there only once in 2000, I believe it was 2004, which was the which marked the first ever pole position for Jenson Button in his Bar Honda, and Takuma Sato was his teammate. The track is so beautiful, man. There's a school inside the track, and this place, you know, this Alta Variante, and the area that leads up to it, when they go up the hill, come down, Acqua Minerale, and they go up Alta Variante, and that's where I was sitting with my buddy. It's just a beautiful, beautiful racing track. So I'm happy that they will continue to race there. So that's good. Okay, sir, a little bit more on the Steve Miller program. Big old jetliner carrying me across the pond, like I said, for the first time in 3 years in terms of going to Zuropa. So Moore is flying out on Sunday afternoon, and I am working with some heavy-duty Formula One-related people, very famous, and they are willing to talk to me, but we're running into some availability issues of timing, and one of the gentlemen is going through a major, what he called, dental surgery. So we'll have to see what can happen. And I've also put in a feeler to one of my very good contacts to put me in touch with a team principal, and we'll see how it works out. If it works out, great, and that would be our plan A. And if plan B, A cannot work, you know, I'm not going to go all the way to Europe to have cappuccino and Schaschlik in Munich. So the plan B will be to go to some racing museum and old historic racing tracks. High on the list is Crystal Palace track near London town. And the other option is Porsche Museum in Stuttgart. I have been to the Mercedes Museum, which is also located in the same city, and it's very, very nice. And I'm sure now it also includes car number 44. Back when I visited, the highlight for me was car number 722. And actually, that was the reason I went there. And this was the car in which Stirling Moss won the 1955 Mille Miglia with very famous, incredibly well-known English journalist Dennis Jenkinson. He was also known as Jenks. And you know, Mr. Rogers, when I went to my first Grand Prix at Monza in 1982, I ran into him and had a brief chat with him after the race. And I remember very well asking him if I could meet him in England. And he said he is headed to Stuttgart for a meeting with Mercedes. So that was interesting. And Jenks was quite a character Stirling Moss once stopped at his house, and he mentioned this when we did the interview also. So he goes to his house for lunch, and he was served lunch, and then he asked Dennis Jenkinson, how come you're not eating? And he said, because you got the plate. Apparently he had only one plate in the house, as he was a man living in a world of his own, the beautiful world of melted rice. Sir, would you have any recommendation for a museum apart from the Schlumpf Museum in Europe? Motorsports related, of course.
The F1 Weekly Museum in Manteca, California.
In Europe. The Manteca is absolutely. It's located in the Speed Building, right?
In the, actually right next to the lavatory. Not me. I have nothing. Matra Museum is always good.
Yeah, I've been there. Matra Museum was very good. Roma Ratan. Okay, sir, here is some good, because we have to have some talk about machismo. So, machismo in driver management. This was very interesting. Fernando Alonso is branching into the world of race driver management. You know, he already has a karting track and a Nando Museum. The two-time world champion has a kart museum, academy, and karting team in his native Asturias, which is where his hometown Oviedo is located. But now he is launching A14 or A14 management. It will be a driver management agency to help drivers achieve their goals through physical training, advice on decision making and financial management, and more. And I note with interest, advice on decision making.
Yes, I'm fine. I've taken a sedative. I'll be okay.
Okay. Now, since I still have sour cream flavor chip on my shoulder, I would like to suggest a few chapters in Nando Management Driver Handbook. There should be a chapter called Watch Out for the Rookie, and the other one is the required, very important, Text Rapido Like Pedro, and that should put any young driver's career on a fast track to a beach chair. What do you think about your Dios getting into driver management?
I thought it was a wonderful thing, branching out, helping the young people become machismo. And what better mentor can you have than the machismo himself?
You know, a lot of drivers exchanges helmets with other drivers. I would like to know I would definitely go to his museum one of these days. I really enjoy going to Spain and Portugal and south of France here. But I would like to know where the helmet of Lewis Hamilton is placed in his museum. Do you think it's displayed prominently, or it's somewhere in the attic or in the banyo?
Exactly. It was converted very artfully into a beautiful toilet seat.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that will be something. No, but, you know, joking aside, both of these people have a lot of respect for each other as racing drivers. And that's what I appreciate. And it's the same with Lewis and Max, you know. So what else would you like to talk about, Mr. Rogers?
Well, the fundamental thoughts about what's really going on in the world. I mean, my goodness. And I thought it was pretty funny that Braun expected everybody to be on top of this porpoising thing because it's such a simple, it's pretty much mechanical ground effects engineering 101. Do we need to contact Tim from Tech Talk to explain it all to us?
Yes, we haven't heard from Tim Tech Talk in a while. So if you're listening, hello, and please have your say on some technical issues as per your convenience.
Excellent, Nass. Keep up the good work. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the episode that everybody's been waiting for. It's opinionated, and once again, none of these opinions reflect the opinions of the F1 Weekly staff and its special guests anytime. So here we go. It's Loosh on the Loose.
Hello, F1 Weekly. This is Lucien Byfield from South Australia with Loosh on the Loose. G'day, Clark and NASA. Today, let's cut the crap. There was a time when sport and politics didn't mix. The same applied to the music industry and other various forms of artistic expression. But today, we find ourselves in a world of virtue signalling and false-fronted PC behaviour, all under the guise of being tolerant, inclusive, and various other labels that really are mostly just lacking in substance. This is not a popular topic, and most will instantly jump on the easy critique of calling me a racist or an intolerant blah blah blah. But what I am saying needs to be addressed, for we are getting faker and faker by the day, and social media is fostering and enabling a dishonest good guy image, and sadly, some of our greatest superstars are milking it for all it is worth. Yes, this will be about Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel, primarily, and some will not like what I have to say, or totally miss the point. But I am not alone in feeling the way I do. With the recent crisis regarding Russia and their invasion of the Ukraine, of course attention should be drawn to this, and a posture taken regarding participation in a country with escalating and questionable actions. But the problem we are encountering now is that Formula One has previously tolerated certain countries and cultures that have also employed non-humanitarian cultural oppression, and sometimes even upon their own people. Whether it be how women are treated, certain religious groups are persecuted, and so many more examples, if you are going to boycott one place, you gotta boycott them all. If you believe in human rights, then you cannot just cherry pick which ones are worse to suit your subjective viewpoint or championship position, and then wear coloured helmets, shoes and the like to make so-called brave statements when protected inside the bubble of the F1 paddock and the false front of social media status. Regarding Lewis Hamilton, in recent times, the most vocal in this regard, he is being heralded as a humanitarian and someone who is brave, taking the lead and making change outside of the cockpit. But I do not agree at all with the magnitude of praise he is receiving. Why? For one, he has only jumped on the bandwagon in a number of areas when others have laid the groundwork, and somehow he has then hijacked the title of a lone warrior leading the way in a world gone astray. Come on. For one, he has had more than a decade to speak up about many issues and did not do it once. But now that it is PC, acceptable, and something others are already doing, suddenly he is doing it and then is seen as a pioneer. But he is not. We all know, whether we are a fan or not, that Lewis is an attention junkie, a social media addict, and a man who craves the limelight. And I'm sorry to say, whether right or wrong, that guy will do whatever it takes to get attention. This is not to say he is doing it all wrong, or that some of his so-called stands are invalid, but the motivations and the purpose behind them is what I call into question. We race as one was the slogan in 2020 that all drivers were to embrace, and yet on the grid you saw the drivers all wearing the same t-shirt except for one, and that one was Lewis, who, apparently, was fighting for equality, inclusiveness, and so much more. No one has picked up on this. I have no idea why. As for BLM and the race issue, I really must address another thing that not many understand at all. Lewis Hamilton was signed up as a child by two whiter-than-white Formula One bigwigs, being Ron Dennis and Norbert Haug, and basically given one of the easiest career paths into Formula One ever seen, which, as we know, has resulted in one of the best and most fortuitous careers in history, making the extreme luck of Michael Schumacher look far less so. Regarding equality and inclusivity, I have followed Formula One intensely for over 30 years, and I have seen plenty of colour, diversity, gender, and age variance, all involved in many levels of the sport. There have been women engineers, strategists on the pit wall, even team leaders. There have also been many diverse drivers, key team personnel, on and on it goes. As for drivers of colour, there have actually been plenty, though some might question how coloured they actually were, which is part of the whole problem in the first place. Regardless, Formula One has employed many team personnel and drivers from diverse nations and backgrounds, but Lewis keeps going on and on about how unfair Formula One is, and how biased and unbalanced it is regarding black people. But it is not, and has not been to the extent he claims. And his career is proof of this. This is what people do not seem to pay attention to. And to add more weight, Lewis is mixed race, for goodness sake, which is another plus he refuses to acknowledge. Let me prove this point further. Today, we are in a far more tolerant age, culture, and racially aware society than ever before. Yet Lewis is still acting like it is not the case. In fact, it was actually worse and harder in his day as a junior karting superstar, and yet his colour didn't stop him one iota in getting to the pinnacle of motor racing and becoming its greatest success. So, why doesn't Lewis Hamilton sing Formula One's praises for not being too racist to stop him from getting into a sport he claims is basically racially imbalanced? Any fool can critique, find fault, and find trouble if they really want to. But Lewis should be a beacon of hope. And he is! Purely by the fact that Formula One didn't stop him joining, succeeding, and prospering beyond any mere mortal's wildest dreams. Lewis just keeps biting the hand that has fed him 5-star four-course meals, and it is going to bite back one day. It has to. Racism is brought to light by constantly making it an issue. And yes, it is real. But imagine for a moment that people stopped calling you a hater, a racist, a xenophobe, etc., whenever you have an opinion, and they just argued the toss instead. Imagine for a moment that booing was accepted as a good-natured part of the banter style of choosing a side instead of being called racism and hate. Imagine if Lewis came out and said, "Hey, Formula One embraced me and gave me my dream and then some, and I am living proof that colour has nothing to do with success." Just imagine what doors would open, instead of claiming that Formula One is so out of touch and out of balance. If it was, he would not be a 7-time world champion, let alone a 1-time race winner, or even a Formula One driver at all. It is time for all of us to wake up to the bullshit and start to think for ourselves again and to realize that there is far more good going on than bad. And by promoting that good, we will achieve more than constantly criticizing and finding faults, and faults that are sometimes not even there. We as a people need to relearn critical thinking skills, which are almost non-existent in this day and age, largely thanks to social media's clickbait, attention-grabbing headline style of communication, and instant labelling to win arguments and diffuse rational debate. As for labels, let us remove the term hater and racist while we're at it. Sure, some people are deserving of those labels, but most are not. It is actually possible to dislike someone or disapprove of what they do, regardless of their gender, race, sexual preference, etc., simply because of their behaviour, personality, and conduct. A jerk is a jerk, regardless of age, gender, racial background, and the colour of their skin. So let us stop throwing around cheap debate-diffusing labels just to win an argument because we cannot take 2 minutes to think about what is really going on. If I do not like a driver for some reason, it might be valid. Or simply personal preference, but not necessarily proof of hate or racism. Remember, to put it bluntly, idiots come in all colours, races, genders, etc. So let's cut the PC false front and get real. Now lastly, to prove how simply someone can be heralded as a voice in today's super sensitive and easy manipulated social media brainwashed world, Lewis made the statement, "Cash is king" in Melbourne 2020 regarding racing amidst the corona outbreak. Once again, he was lauded for speaking out against the establishment. But hey, Lewis, no one made you go to Melbourne. No one forced you to do something against your will. Think about it, people. Anyway, that's it. Rant over. This is Lucien Byfield in South Australia.
Keep up the good work. And now we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Enzo Fittipaldi, and you guys are listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the machismo himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And we're going to start with area where excitement is part of daily life. Middle East, the MotoGP season opener in Qatar, the big Q. Jorge Martin on pole. Man, I watched this race, and Mr. Rogers, as I said once before a couple of years ago, if I'm coming back again in this world, I'm going to be number one MotoGP fan. I just love this series, very competitive, very good. No silliness, no stupid cautions, just plain simple racing for like 45 minutes. Anyway, so Martin was on pole. Marc Marquez qualified third, and he has not been on pole since Bottega 2019. Keep in mind, he missed a lot of races because of injury. Enea Bastianini, maiden win for this Italian rider on Italian bike Ducati. Emotional win for his Gresini team, as their team owner Fausto Gresini passed away last year from COVID. This was first win for Grassini team since Tony Elias beat Rossi at the last second in the 2006 Portuguese MotoGP race at Estoril. And I remember this race very well. In the post-race interview, Rossi took a towel and started wiping the sweat from Elias's face. And that was very cute. Back to the race on Sunday, Brad Binder from Republic of South Africa was second for the Austrian KTM team, which, not surprisingly, is sponsored by Red Bull. Honda rider and the nicest man of MotoGP, Paul Espargaró, led most of the race, but late in the event, they ganged up on him and he finished third. He was also looking for his first win. He's on the Nigel Mansell and Mika Hakkinen program. He has done over 100 races and still waiting for his first win. His brother Alex Espargaró was fourth and Marquez finished fifth. Interestingly, you know, the first three races of MotoGP season this year, Qatar, Indonesia, then all the way to Argentina, which is very, very interesting. Okay, the Ducati win also saw another Ducati disaster as pole man Martin was taken out by the Ducati of Paco Bagnaia. Paco was trying to pass him when he lost control and took both out. And for that, we give Paco the Maldonado of the Weekend Award. Do you remember when Pastor Maldonado was racing? Some guy was running a website called Has Pastor Crashed Today?
I do. It was very exciting.
Yeah, that was very exciting. Okay, sir, IndyCar news. Hybrid engine has been delayed, and hopes are high in IndyCar Nation that there will be a third engine supplier in our lifetime, and most likely it will be Toyota. And I hope some other manufacturer comes in, because they'll bring a big budget, and hopefully they will demand top names. And who knows, Machismo one day could be racing for Toyota in Le Mans, Dakar, and IndyCar. Maybe he should get a Honda bike also and show everybody how much he's... Hey, Michael Schumacher tried that, if you remember. Would you like to see Nando, after Formula One, be an IndyCar racer full-time?
Yes, I would. Just for my fun excitement and uberance. And to bring Machismo and Paella to America.
Yeah, if he wins Indy 500, that'll be very, very impressive. And good for the sport and good for him also.
Anyway, did you watch the NASCAR race in Las Vegas?
I watched some of it. And you know what? Again, I enjoy all kinds of motorsports and many other sports also, frankly speaking. But you know what I don't like? I saw that and I thought it was a pit stop or caution. They said it was the end of stage one or stage two. I don't like this kind of stages. Has really bothered me about NASCAR. I like sprint races, you know, keep going. But I watch quite a bit of it. And as long as I'm watching, I'm enjoying, that's for sure. Did you watch the full race? I'll be surprised if you say yes.
Well, I couldn't watch the full race, but there was a lot of it where there was some pretty good excitement. And for Bowman to come in and win this race was pretty impressive, because we all know who we thought was going to win. And it was an interesting race, but there's just too many cautions. But now I figured it all out, Nasser. It's all set up to sell junk food. The more cautions, the more you eat, the bigger you get, the more you look like Tony Stewart. So the caution means caution, don't get up and eat. And there was even a caution to get you ready for the next caution.
Oh, that is so beautiful. I like the part, so you can look like Tony Stewart. And you know what? His nickname is Smoke. So, and then you can do a grill also, barbecue at the track.
Bravo.
Oh, yes. So, well, as Mr. Rogers said, Alex Bowman took victory over Kyle Larson in the Pennzoil 400. And this Kyle Larson is a very great talent, that's for sure. And they are also now hoping to get him into the Indy 500, which would be... You know what Mr. Roger Penske should do is they should really get Alonso, Jenson Button to do a few IndyCar races. You know, could be long, some high profile, maybe Indy 500. I always thought, man, I mean, they missed out on a very good opportunity even some years ago when that series was really suffering and when Tony George was spending hundreds of millions of dollars of family fortune. They could have brought in Nicola Prost and Bruno Senna and put them as teammates. Can you imagine Senna and Prost as teammates? That would have been very, very cool. But they should do something to create. You remember when it's very sad how it worked out when this guy, Randy Bernard, who was the CEO of IndyCars, and he tried to do this big 40-car field at Las Vegas, ironically at Las Vegas, and it cost the life of Dan Weldon. But I think they should really try to get some couple of very big names. If you bring in Jenson Button for a couple of races, it'll be global news. You bring in, you know, Nando again, that'll be big news. So they should, or even Mark Webber, you know, have him do a couple of IndyCar races. Just for promotional purposes, I think it would be very good. Who would you like to see race in NASCAR, in IndyCar?
Well, to be honest with you, I'd like I said earlier, I'd love to see Fernando gravitate to IndyCar, hang out over here in California. Maybe him and I could, you know, maybe do a little shuck and jive.
Okay, sir. Now we come to famous last words. Today they come from German rallying legend Walter Röhrl. You remember him in the Audi Quattro. I saw him race Audi Quattro in IMSA GTO, I think it was at Sears Point many years ago. You know, he's talking about Max, and Max last year, whether you like him or not, he won 10 races and was on the podium 18 times from 22 races. So that's mega performance. This is Walter's assessment of the high-flying Dutchman. He said, and I quote, "He certainly drives a car very well, but as a driver, he's a brute. He drives like a wild axe in the forest," end quote. And with that, we cut down this edition of Motorsports Mondial. And sir, are you ready for Mr. Rhys Gore?
Absolutely. Introduce this young man.
Yes, this young racing talent is from Miami FLA, and he is in his second year of Indy Pro 2000 Series. Indy Pro 2000 Series is equivalent to like European F3. It's two steps below IndyCar. You have IndyCars, Indy Lights, then Indy Pro 2000. So this conversation took place at St. Petersburg, Florida, which is where he was racing a couple of weeks ago. And I would like to thank him for his time, and hopefully we will catch up. I'm planning to do a few IndyCar races this year, sir. So hopefully we'll catch up with him. And hope listeners enjoy this little conversation. Okay, folks, I'm here with young American talent, Mr. Rhys Gore. Rhys, welcome to F1 Weekly. How was the opening round of the race of the season?
Not bad, not our greatest, but, you know, did a full year last year. Our confidence is there. Our team's great. So, you know, just need to bounce back from this, and we have a long season to go. So I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. This is your second season in the series. Will Mr. Gold settle for silver, or winning the championship is the only goal?
Well, Mr. Gold is going for gold, but everyone's here to win. I'm here to win as well, so that's, we're going for the top prize.
Okay, what sparked your interest in racing? Is it coming from mom and dad, or something you discovered on your own?
From my dad, he raced amateurly. He took me to his races when I was a kid, and when I was 5, he gave me my first go-kart. I hopped in it in my Crocs and a helmet that was way too big for me, and drove it around the neighborhood. And then from then, I've just been progressing up the ranks.
Okay, you're from Miami FLA. The big show is coming to your town in May. Are you going to the Miami Grand Prix?
I hope so. The tickets are pretty sold out, but I think we'll be able to get in. So I'm really excited that it's going to be a fun race right in my hometown. I'm looking forward to it a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this. I Googled how much the tickets are. They're only $1,700. I'm sure you can handle that. Okay, you raced in go-karts for a few years. Did you ever compete in European karting?
I did two races in Europe. I did the Rock World Finals in Garda, mm-hmm. I believe 2016 and 17. Didn't do too bad. I wasn't the greatest wet driver back then, and those Italians and Europeans are quite fast in the rain, but I made it to the B final and finished 5th, and I was fast, so I only got to do it twice. I wish I got to do it more, but overall, it was a fun experience.
And what about your karting racing days here? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I started when I was 5 go-karting up, and I go-karted up until I was about 13. I did fairly well in the States. I won many national championships, Supercars USA, USPKS, Florida Winter Tour, Rock, Florida, many races, and a lot of wins, and it was just a really fun experience. It taught me a lot, really prepared me for the next step in cars.
Okay, transition from karting to single-seaters, was that smooth sailing or took some time for you to get going?
It was definitely a bit of a transition, but I did Lucas Oil School of Racing. They have a great program there with really good coaches. And the biggest thing is, you know, the aerodynamics and the braking. So it took me a little to get used to that, but I caught on fairly quickly, and it was a really big help having everyone at Lucas Oil to help me.
Well, the plug for Lucas Oil was in my next question. Your career got into Top Gear in 2018 when you won the Lucas Oil Series with, I believe, 5 wins, 13 podiums from 16 races. Your high points from that season?
Yeah, that was Lucas Oil was great. They have many coaches with experience on how to teach young drivers the, you know, the really key points of a car, and it was just a fun environment to race. A lot of good competition, you know, very experienced, even older gentlemen like 16, 17-year-olds that were putting pressure on me to kids my age, and it was really fun. We got to do many tracks that Road Indy races on, and it really prepped me for Road Indy, especially the car didn't have aero, so it teaches you a lot more about the feedback and the key points of a car without having that aero to help you.
You know, a lot of drivers who do very well in karting do also very well in motor racing, no surprise. But there have been quite a few world champions in karting, and, you know, Nick DeVries is an example who took 3 years to win Formula Renault, basic European series. Why do you think is that some drivers just cannot adapt to single-seaters?
Well, yeah, I think it goes both ways. Sometimes there's people that are slow in karting and fast in cars, so I think it's just, you can be fast in karting, but it's just a completely different world in cars. And usually people can transition well, but sometimes it takes a bit longer. But usually, I mean, like you said, DeVries, after 3 years, now he's, you know, Formula E, I think, champion. I'm not sure, but right. Eventually they do get it. So I think some people just take a bit longer to learn, but if you're fast in cars, it's a good stepping stone for cars.
Yeah, because if you're slow, you got a huge problem. Okay, in 2020, you were third in the U.S. Formula 2000 Series and also did some Formula 4 races in Mexico. What's the main difference between these two cars, and how was the depth of competition south of the border?
A little difference between the cars. The F4 car had less power and less aero, but the one I drove in Mexico was actually turbocharged, so you have a little bit of dynamics because you have to wait for the turbo to spool up, so that would create it. And competition-wise, it was a great race, many great competitors, and one thing that really stood out to me was the fans. You know, it was just an F4 race. Usually here, F4, you get no one, but the grandstands were packed. Mm-hmm. I was getting interviewed from local TV stations. It was a really awesome experience to experience the, you know, the culture. They really embraced it there, and it was really fun.
Did they call you El Los Fast Gringo?
I don't know. They probably did that. I'm not sure, but I'm guessing they did, but I'll take it.
Okay, sure. Okay, last year you were in top five in Indy Pro with victory in New Jersey. What did you learn most that will give you an edge over rookie drivers this year?
I think the main thing is the tracks with this car, coming back to it, knowing where I left off last year. We're not going to New Jersey this year, but I think just every track, Barber, Road America, all these different tracks I've been to already, I've raced that in this car. So I think that helps us a bit. You know, a lot of other people are in the same situation as me, but I think we'll be good.
Okay. You mentioned Road America is one of my all-time favorite tracks. What track do you like in the U.S. apart from that?
Apart from Road America, that's probably my favorite. But another track I love is Laguna Seca, the corkscrew, a lot of elevation changes through the hills of California. That's an awesome track as well.
And are you pretty good in rain now?
Yes, I have improved in rain. Okay. Actually, New Jersey, that was one of my best races ever, and that was in the rain. I gained a lot of spots, so I have learned a lot in the rain thanks to my coach and some other people around me.
And who do you see as your main title challengers this season?
I think there's many fast people. You know, it's the first race, so I think it's going to funnel down as we go, but I think my teammate Anam Ahmed is a great competitor, as well as Lewis Foster, and I think the whole field is brings a challenge. So we'll see as the season goes on, but I think it's going to be a close-fought championship.
Great. Okay, stock market is one of your hobbies, so I have to ask you, Netflix, buy, sell, or hold?
Well, a couple of days ago, I would have said to buy. It's on a big dip from its peak, but now with the whole Russia situation, I would stay out of the market in general for a while. But long-term, I think Netflix is a buy.
Okay. Do you ever watch this crazy guy, Jim Cramer, on TV?
Yes, Mad Money, I watch him a lot.
Oh, yeah, he's one of a kind. Okay, speaking of Netflix, are you a fan of Drive to Survive?
I haven't seen the recent season, but the first two seasons, I was definitely hooked. It's very exciting, the drama. Maybe they dramatize a little too much, but I think it's really good to bring non-racing lovers into our sport and show them how amazing our sport is.
I don't know if you've been to Circuit of the Americas. I've been there for many years. The crowd this year was unbelievable, and everybody was talking about, you know, Netflix this, Netflix that. Okay, Lewis Hamilton is your favorite driver. Your thoughts on what happened in the season finale last year, not just as a Lewis Hamilton fan, but as a racing driver also.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's many different views in it. I'm not an expert on the F1 rules. I think, you know, either way, they're both deserved. You know, Max had a great season. I think Hamilton was the one to win that race. Off the rules that I've seen, it looked like maybe they should have just finished under safety car, but I don't know. I think, you know, that really sucks for Hamilton, I mean, to lose like that. And but yeah, I think overall, you know, that's the stewards' decision. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah. His teammate now is George Russell. Do you think he will do to Lewis what Lewis did to Alonso at McLaren? Which is what we call on our podcast, our favorite two words, cage rattling.
I don't know. I mean, Russell's a great driver. It's his first year. But that one race he did with Bottas and the Mercedes, he was mega fast. So I think we might have a Hamilton-Rosberg situation as well. I mean, he's mega fast. I think it's going to be interesting.
Who is guiding your racing career? And do you have a manager or mom and dad helping you on this?
Well, I have my parents, but my coach, Oswaldo Negri Jr., he's my coach and he's my mentor. He's everything. He's an IMSA champion. He's won many races. He has almost 50 years of experience in racing, so it's just a huge boost to have him helping me.
Great. Where would you like to be your racing career in 5 years?
I would love to, by then, hopefully be in IndyCar, in the Entity IndyCar Series. That's my dream and my goal right now, hopefully with Andretti Autosport or Junco's. Hopefully that'd be awesome to keep climbing up the ranks with them as well.
Okay. Indy 500, one of the greatest races. It's more of an American institution than a race. Question for you. When you get there, and I hope you do, what would you, if gods of racing give you a choice, become the IndyCar champion or become Indy 500 winner? What will Mr. Gore do?
That is tough, but as much as Indy 500 champion might be more memorable, I'd have to go with IndyCar champion because that means you've probably won a lot of races throughout the season, whereas you can win the Indy 500 and nothing else. So I think overall IndyCar champion.
Okay. I appreciate your time, and thank you for the lady here for helping this. Finally, how about a message for our listeners? We have a global audience, and tell them about your social media, how they can follow your racing career.
Yep, thank you everyone for listening. My name is Reese Gold. You can follow me on Instagram at ReeseGold3. Yeah, hopefully you guys keep watching the season. I think it's going to be a fun one.
Thank you. All the best, man.
Thank you.
Reese, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nas, final thoughts before I go into the editing room.
Well, I was talking to my sister about 15 minutes before you call, and she was asking me how I'm doing, and I said I'm as happy as I have ever been in my life. We got motor racing all over, and that pretty much ended the conversation right there and then. But I'm very happy, man. A lot of things are going on. It's motorsports here, there, everywhere. The Amelia Island show was going on in Florida. The Daytona Bike Week and lots of motor racing. But the big daddy is on the 20th. Really, really. And I believe the second Grand Prix is a week after that, right? If I'm not mistaken.
You are correct.
In the remaining days of March, we're going to have two Formula One races, a Sebring 12 hours. I mean, who could ask for anything more, Mr. Rogers?
Fernando winning every day.
He won't be coming to Sebring, obviously. Well, I tell you, it was great to see him at Daytona some years ago.
Of course, of course, of course. And I ran into him in Canada. That's another story for another time, Nasser. Unfortunately, you know, you've heard all the talk that Fernando's great. That's what they're saying over at Alpine. Fernando's wonderful, fantastic, the best of the best. But the car, not so much. It's not going to break any records, so everybody's sort of on the, we'll watch the show, and hopefully the cooking is better in the Alpine mess tent.
Well, interesting. Remember when we met this gentleman from Renault from the 70s, 80s, technical director, Mr. Francois Castaigne, that members of the British teams were always interested in coming to the Renault hospitality for food?
I do.
Yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes.
That's okay. He's still a nice guy. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. But I want to see some cage rattling. I want to see some, what you call, whippersnapper sticking it to both Lewis and Max, because nobody walks on water, you know, if you give... remember when Charles Leclerc got that... what Max Carroll, that's what happens when you cheat. When he had that special engine or whatever they were doing with the hot air, when he won basically unchallenged at Spa and Monza. I mean, what your first two wins at Spa and Monza, I mean, that's heaven for any racing driver. So I think if he has a car that's the best, Bocage, then Leclerc will stick it to a lot of people. And I really, really want to see first Grand Prix win for Carlos Sainz Jr. and Lando Norris.
Who do you think goes to the FIA and say they were cheating first? Christian Horner or Toto Wolff if Ferrari starts winning the first three races?
Well, I think complaining has already started because somebody wrote an article in one of the website, Formula Cheating has already begun. The answer to your question would be, whoever finishes second to Ferrari. If it's Mercedes, then it will be Toto or James Vowell, and or Christian Horner will open his mouth as he liked to do.
Well, the answer is Christian Horner, because Toto will still be analyzing the Massey messages from Abu Dhabi. Obsessed and bitter. Bitter and obsessed.
I think he's going to get more bitter if Lewis does not get another... He'll be really P.O.
If he doesn't get number 8 this year, then Toto goes into the full-blown rubber room because he'll have bitterness and chips on one side, chips on the other.
But, you know, sometimes you get into these reign of utter domination, as we have seen with different teams over the last 20 years. Max signing for... long-term with Red Bull could be good news for Lewis, because in a couple of years the Honda package is gone, and I don't think I'll be surprised if whoever they take on, Audi, Porsche or whatever, that they will hit the ground running and winning. So that can give a opening to let's put it this way, Mr. Rogers, how long you've been following Formula One?
Since the 70s, you know, Prost, the good stuff, breaking down.
In your lifetime, would you like to see Lewis get championship number 8, yes or no?
I would love to see that.
Same here. But we want to see him win. We don't want races decided in boardrooms and courtrooms and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so we'll see. Yeah.
How do you think George Russell will feel when LCH takes that 8th trophy home?
I think he'll do a... I think Valtteri Bottas will get a collect call.
I'm telling you, man. That's the conversation I want to hear.
Yeah, Bottas in Switzerland will get a call. This is Vodafone calling. Will you accept a collect call from Mr. Russell? And Bottas will say, oh, I'm trying to connect with Mr. Barrichello in Brazil.
And he's trying to connect with Irvine.
Yes, in Miami.
I can't wait for the movie. That's all I've got to say. Nas, keep up the good work. Outstanding interview. Lush, I love you very much. I want to thank everybody who listens. Keep up the good work. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.